This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Bank earnings are all over the place.
So how is the financial sector doing?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, July 19th.
Coming up on the program, the Murdochs go to Parliament.
Borders says goodbye, leaving thousands unemployed and hundreds of big box stores empty. We'll have the latest.
And a frequent rider on a New York ferry could just as easily fly to his destination. We're going to tell you about that a little later on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Bank of America today posted a bigger-than-expected loss in its second quarter thanks to an expensive mortgage-backed security settlement and bad loans. The biggest U.S. bank by assets said it lost about $9 billion last quarter.
Meanwhile, the nation's biggest investment bank, Goldman Sachs, reported a profit of more than $1 billion. Now, what do these numbers say about the state of the American financial market? Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us from Washington with the latest on that story. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So what are these profit reports telling us?
That despite all the stimulus measures, all the cheap money that the Fed's been throwing at banks to loosen their lending, this four-year-old subprime mortgage crisis is still weighing down the industry. It's the largest quarterly loss in Bank of America's history. Just a year ago, it was posting a $3 billion profit. Most of the bank's red ink this time is due to an $8.5 billion settlement with investors who bought sour mortgage bonds from the bank.
And what about Goldman Sachs, the titan of investment banks, John?
So better than Bank of America, but worse than many analysts had expected. Goldman, too, is stuck with these bad mortgages. The other drag on Goldman's bottom line comes from new regulations. Standard & Poor's banking analyst Christopher Maimon says banks are being asked to set aside more money to insure against future losses, but that comes at a cost.
The higher the minimum level of capital required for these banks, the less capital they have to invest. And so that ultimately may prove to be a drag on the sustainability of Goldman's earnings.
Plus, there's new evidence that banks are still mired in the mortgage mess. Local governments are reporting that they're still seeing these robo-signing of mortgage paperwork, signatures that prove loans and foreclosure documents are being processed without any scrutiny by the bank. So these problems are going to continue.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reporting from Washington. John, thanks.
My pleasure.
Meanwhile, today in the UK, News Corporation CEO Rupert Murdoch is facing tough questions from the British Parliament, the latest in a phone hacking scandal that's seen a criminal investigation, high-level resignations, and the News of the World tabloid newspaper shut down.
Now, Murdoch is Australian. He built News Corp into the media empire it is today, spanning numerous continents and TV networks and newspapers. Reporter Stuart Cohen is with us now from Sydney, Australia, with a profile of Murdoch. Hi, Stu.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
So how important is today's parliamentary testimony to the future of News Corporation?
It could be a key day for the CEO, Rupert Murdoch himself. There are reports that depending on the testimony, Murdoch may be replaced as CEO of the company that he built from scratch from his home in Australia.
How did Murdoch get to where he is now, Stu?
Well, he inherited a small newspaper from his father in 1953, which also gave him control of News Limited, a publishing company which had been around since before the Great Depression. He spent the next few years acquiring smaller newspapers around Australia, mostly tabloids, and even founded the country's first national newspaper, The Australian. From Australia, he expanded into the UK when he bought the tabloid we've all learned so much about the past couple weeks, The News of the World, in 1968. And then in the 70s, he expanded to the U.S.
And, of course, his empire now is quite vast, right?
Yeah, well, while his newspaper operations have been catching a lot of headlines the past couple weeks, Murdoch's company is truly a multimedia company. In fact, they're the third largest media conglomerate after Time Warner and Disney. News Corporation in the U.S. obviously owns the Wall Street Journal and Fox News. The company also owns a satellite TV company based in Hong Kong. And then back here in Australia, the original News Limited now owns a whopping 70% of Australia's newspapers, and they even have a few subsidiaries operating throughout the Caribbean.
Stuart Cohen reporting from Sydney, Australia. Stuart, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Now let's get to real estate. Two big stories this morning. Borders bookstore chain is going out of business and will be closing its remaining 400 stores, but the government said this morning that new home construction hit a six-month high last month. Julie Neiman is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, and she is with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Julie, let's start with Borders. It's going to be closing its remaining stores. What kind of an impact is that going to have?
Well, it's bad news for commercial real estate. They have both freestanding and high-end malls. And you're basically looking at huge competition that's coming from the internet now. So you're probably going to see even tougher times for these big box outfits.
Okay, well, what are you supposed to do about that? Do we tear down these old Borders stores?
Well, there's a problem there because, again, some of them are freestanding. Those conceivably you could be because who can fill it? It's got to be another big box outfit. The freestand in the malls, though, you're going to see more of them. Those are smaller outlets, possibly filled by other kinds of retailers. But even right now, retail is very, very slow. It's not recovering simply because there are fewer households being formed, little income growth, and very low job growth. So retail is still stalled out.
And, Julie, what about new home construction? We got this word this morning from the government that housing starts hit a six-month high last month. What's going on there?
Well, the good news is it wasn't horrible news. Probably the biggest area is that it's a demand for rental properties. People can't buy when prices are still going down and employment is soft, so now they're going into rental properties. Banks right now have the old-time values, 20% down. You have to have a job, verifiable income, credit rating. So people are definitely moving over into the rental side. Now, the good news on rentals means that you've got an indicator of some stability in the job market coming here. Maybe the kids are moving out of mom's basement. On the building side, more available rental properties to meet demand. Rents are likely to ease somewhat as new supply hits the market, and there's hope that in a year or two you can dump the roommates.
All right. Well, we'll take that. Julie Neiman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
Well, today the House of Representatives will vote on a Republican plan to raise the debt ceiling in exchange for a constitutional amendment requiring a balanced federal budget. The plan is not, by the way, expected to pass the Senate.
Now, Steve, we are exactly 2 weeks away from that August 2nd deadline to raise the debt ceiling and avoid default.
Mm-hmm.
But all through this debate, there's been something missing in the negotiations. Women. For more, we welcome the chair of the Congressional Caucus for Women's Issues, Democrat Susan Davis of California. Good morning.
Hi, Jeremy. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. Well, there were no women in the Gang of Six. There were no women in the Biden talks. And if you look around the table of the president's debt talks, you've got just Nancy Pelosi, one woman. Is that a problem for you?
Leader Pelosi can be a very strong voice for women, and I think she continues to do that. But, you know, we're 17% of the Congress.
Is it an issue that you've brought up with the people who are running the debt talks?
It's difficult sometimes because women traditionally have not been in the Congress as long. And so in terms of leadership, that tends to be a problem. What's so important about having women at the table is that we really are the caregivers, both to the young and to the old. Women are the principal caregivers. They also live longer than men. So these issues of Social Security and Medicare are very, very central to them. Of course, the women can't always agree with one another either. But I think there is something in the way that we work together. I sometimes kid and say that women are used to having, you know, three toddlers and two cookies. And so they know how to solve problems.
But when it comes to the actual substance of these debt talks, it seems that both the men and the women in Congress are pretty much sticking to their party line. Do you think the substance would be different if you had more women at the table?
I think if there were many more women, it absolutely would be. Sometimes, because there are not as many women, certainly not token in this case, because the women in Congress are very strong, very competent and capable women. But I do think that numbers would matter, and that would make the real difference.
Congresswoman Susan Davis, Democrat of California, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
100-year-old company International Business Machines, we know it simply as IBM, said earnings increased 8% last quarter. That had stocks higher earlier today.
I wonder if Watson was excited about that
Watson.
The other thing that's up today, by the way, Steve, is the price of gold selling for more than $1,600 an ounce. Now, that is a record, but if you adjust for inflation, we are well below the all-time high.
The numbers, of course, are at our website, marketplace.org. You can follow us there and friend us on Facebook.
We're also on Twitter. The program is at Marketplace Radio.
And my Twitter address is at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective, the United States has a strategic oil reserve. Well, China has a strategic pork reserve. And now Beijing says it's going to release some of the other white meat onto the market.
That's because with all the growth in China, pork is in short supply and prices have jumped by 60% in the last year. The BBC's Andrew Wood reports now from Hong Kong.
The Chinese eat more pork than any other meat. Each of the 1.3 billion people in China consumes on average 100 pounds of pork a year. Patrick Chuvanek is an associate professor at Tsinghua University's School of Economics and Management in Beijing. He says pork is a politically sensitive issue because it affects rich and poor across the country.
People eat pork in almost every region of China as a basic component of their diet. The total population of pigs in China is 400 million. That's quite a lot of pigs.
A year ago, pork prices were falling, and many pigs were slaughtered to stabilize the price. As a result, farmers now can't keep up with demand. The government has £450 million of frozen pork in reserve in massive warehouses. That's only a few days' worth of consumption, though, and not nearly enough to keep inflation under control. In Hong Kong, I'm the BBC's Andrew Wood for Marketplace.
Later today, Apple Computers will tell us how they did in the last quarter, including how well iPads and iPhones have been selling here in the U.S. But Apple's real long-term strength may come from China. It's close to sealing a deal with China Mobile, the world's largest mobile carrier. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
China didn't always seem like a slam dunk for Apple.
They had no stores. Their technology and their products were considered too expensive.
That was just a few years ago, says Michael Clendenin, an analyst with RedTech Advisors.
They had very little hope of competing in a China that, you know, was perceived as being full of penny-pinching consumers.
But there are millions of consumers in China who don't fit that stereotype. A typical Apple store in China has four times the number of people walking through its doors than a U.S. Apple store. A country that used to be an afterthought for Apple is now seen for what it is, a land of more than a billion consumers. Apple has plans to build 25 more stores in China by the end of next year. And then there's that China Mobile deal. It would suddenly make the iPhone available to half a billion more consumers. That's got some analysts predicting Apple will soon make more money in China than it makes at home. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Another company reporting earnings today is Chipotle Mexican Grill. Chipotle is expected to wow the market with another strong quarter as Americans continue their lunch affair with the bulky burrito, or perhaps the burrito bowl, Steve, when you're feeling like you want to be a little healthier.
Absolutely.
Marketplace's Jeff Horwich went looking for Chipotle's secret salsa.
Wrap your hands around this. If you had bought $100 of stock in Chipotle a year ago, today you'd have $250. That's like enough for 7 3 burrito challenges on YouTube.
Uno, dos, tres. Chipotle has made me an awful lot of money.
Seth Jason writes for The Motley Fool, where they're free to eat the rewards of the stocks they research. Chipotle's adding 140 stores this year and packing more people into the ones it's got. Jason credits an unchanging menu that actually changes more than we know.
Just putting a different type of corn into one of the salsas or treating chili peppers a slightly different way to get more essential oil out. There are very few restaurant companies, I think, out there that would bother to do that.
Jason says Chipotle's had the stomach to do one simple thing well.
Well, I think that's part of the charm of Chipotle. You don't have to say to yourself, geez, do I really need to try the McGriddle? Is there going to be syrup in the bread of my sandwich?
Things did get a little sticky last year when Chipotle fired hundreds of workers in Minnesota and D.C. after a federal immigration audit. Morningstar analyst R.J. Hottovy says the fallout hasn't hit the bottom line. A bigger challenge, food prices.
Beef and pork, avocados are a multi-year high as well. Basically, every commodity that they pay for stands above historical averages with the exception of chicken.
The company's about to test whether the Chipotle magic works beyond the burrito. Its new Asian chain, called ShopHouse, rolls out this summer. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Now for a little dessert after that big burrito, Jeremy, there's a contentious lawsuit.
This is like the foodiest show I've
ever
heard.
It really is. And here we go again. We're talking about cupcakes, specifically the sweet bits on top of those cupcakes. What are they called? Those little sweet, tiny
sprinkles.
Little beads. Oh, they're called sprinkles. Yes, they are. I don't know if you can say that, Jeremy, because Candace Nelson, who owns a chain of cupcake shops called Sprinkles, is suing a Connecticut store called Pink Sprinkles. The suit demands Pink Sprinkles stop using sprinkles in its name, saying, quote, and this is what the lawsuit says, by the way, the resulting confusion will damage Sprinkles and injure its reputation. I don't know if you can injure Sprinkles, but...
Sounds like there is trouble in cupcake land.
Yes, there is. Boy, those cupcakes sound good. Today, the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers is going to start airing radio commercials attacking the Obama administration's plans for higher fuel efficiency standards. Now, the industry accepted an earlier increase in those standards, but as Sally Herships reports, some carmakers say the new hike goes a little too far.
2 years ago, the administration and carmakers agreed to new CAFE standards, which regulate fuel efficiency in cars. The goal? Slightly more than 35 miles per gallon.
That standard has been agreed to. Everyone's in agreement. That is on the books, so to speak.
Bill Visnick is an analyst at Edmunds.com. But the Obama administration is reportedly working on a new standard, 56 miles per gallon, and that's got car makers warning about job losses across seven states.
Well, the car makers are upset on a variety of fronts. So first of all, we don't know how doable that is.
Jay Barron is president of the Center for Automotive Research. He says cars that get 56 miles per gallon would run consumers an extra $7,000 per car.
And if cars are priced higher than they are now, you will lower demand.
But supporters of the higher standards say car manufacturers should invest in fuel-efficient technology now to offset higher gas prices in the future. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, there's a ferry that goes back and forth between New York City and Weehawken, New Jersey, every day.
I know it well, yes.
And the price of the tickets is about $10, but there's one passenger that's been going back and forth every single day without paying. Mm-hmm. He gets on the ferry in the morning and rides back and forth for 2 hours, not actually getting off on either side,
right?
And then comes back during the evening rush hour.
What a freeloader.
And does the same
him.
Thing. Two more hours of it. The guy's name is Tony, and he is a pigeon.
A pigeon.
And he shows up every day on the
like
boat.
That.
Apparently, the crew of the ship say that he thinks he's a human and that he only misses the boat during blizzards. But they say he actually is better at cleaning up the crumbs that the passengers leave on the ground than the employees are.
Wow.
So he's earning his keep.
That's a testament. Wow. That's nice. Do you look outside the window. Do you see any pigeons? No, I don't see any pigeons.
No, we don't have pigeons here.
Just sunshine and palm trees.
Sunshine
man.
And palm trees.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.